This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble editor Nick Seabrook sits down with Alberta political analyst Dave Cornoyer to review the recent provincial election in Alberta and the newly re-elected Premier of Alberta, Danielle Smith. Smith and the Alberta New Democrat leader, Rachel Notley, were neck and neck for most of this election, but even after scandal, and despite losing some seats, Danielle Smith's United Conservative Party was able to amass enough support to overtake Notley and the New Democrats. Here to break down this turbulent election is Dave Cornoyer. Dave Cornoyer is an Edmonton-based writer, political watcher, and communications professional. He writes about Alberta politics at daveberta.substack.com and is the host of the Dave Berta podcast. He can be found on Twitter at Dave Cornoyer and on Instagram at Dave Berta. Here are Nick Seabrook and Dave Cornoyer in conversation. Take a listen.
All right. Thank you very much, David, for taking the time to join us today and talk about the results of this week's election in Alberta. So to sort of get into it, from your perspective, what was the election all about? Or what was your takeaway?
You know, the first week of the election campaign, I would have said, if you would have asked me then what the main narrative, what the main issues of this election was about, I would have said healthcare and affordability. It's nothing new. Healthcare is always one of the top issues, but it's really one of the top issues right now because of the staffing crisis, the nursing shortage, the closures we're seeing around the province. That's not just an Alberta phenomenon. It's happening in other provinces too. And then affordability was an issue. I mean, Albertans, you know, the cost of living is a little more affordable in Alberta than it is in other parts of the country. But, you know, grocery bills are still going up, utility bills are going up, and normal people, regular working people are feeling that pressure. So I'd say in the first week, that was the issue. As the election went on, you know, it was a strange election. We were kind of interrupted in the middle with the wildfire emergency. I'd say the economy became kind of an issue during the campaign, which, I mean, economy and jobs, it's always obviously top on people's minds. But then by the time the last week of the election campaign rolled around, it really felt that the election was about voting against the other party. And that, you know, I think that, you know, there are people on both sides because this is a very much a two-party race. I don't think any of the other parties got more than 1% of the vote. It was a split between the UCP and the NDP. But it was very much a divided electorate trying to keep the other side out. And we saw a lot of people show up in the polls. And I think that was one of the reasons why.
So in terms of voter turnout, was this high voter turnout?
It was about 62% is what I've heard from Elections Alberta. And that's, for Alberta, that's pretty good. In the last election, we had, I think, 67% voter turnout. But if you go back to like the mid-2000s, I think it was the 2008 election, we had about like a 40% voter turnout in Alberta. So it was we have had quite low turnout results in some recent elections in the recent past. But 62% was pretty good for an Alberta election.
So in terms of the results, were you surprised with how the vote turned out?
Not particularly. On May 1st, when the day the election was called, I wrote down some numbers on a piece of paper, kind of my prediction, and I was one seat off. I think I had the NDP winning one more seat than they did, and the UCP winning one less than they did. So the election was pretty much where I thought it was going to go, where I felt it was going into the campaign. They, up until about last November, the NDP had a huge lead in the polls, and that was largely due with the incredible unpopularity of Jason Kenney as the Premier of Alberta. He was driving his party into the ground and picking fights left, right, and center with people who would be in groups who would be otherwise friendly to the Conservatives, and actively driving people away from his party. Almost immediately when Jason Kenney announced he was resigning after he very extremely narrowly won the leadership review last year, the UCP started to rebound in the polls. And I think this is Alberta. There are a lot of Conservatives in Alberta and a lot of self-identified Conservatives in Alberta who feel very comfortable voting for a Conservative party. And what we saw back to last October and last November is the NDP's lead in the polls evaporated, and they were tied neck and neck with the UCP, and the polls would go back and forth. And, you know, the NDP, one poll would come out and the NDP would be ahead by 4, and the next one would come out and the UCP would be ahead by 2. But it was very close. The changes were really within the margins for the most part. And that's what we saw going into this election. We saw on election day that we also, you know, it ended up being a very divided electorate. You have, you know, the rural areas and the small cities for the most part, which are extremely strong for the UCP. It's a big blue wall as soon as you get out of the major city limits. In Edmonton, the NDP are as strong as they were in 2015 when they won every seat in Edmonton. And they did win every seat in Edmonton, and by big margins for the most part. So that left a couple of other areas of the province to be competitive. The parties fighting over where there's actually seats that could change. And Calgary was the big one that people were paying attention to. And it turns out that Calgary was actually in play. When people hear Calgary, you know, it's like people think Alberta's version of Houston, right? Oil town. You know, it does have a big influence. There's a lot of business down from the States that comes up. It's a different city than Edmonton. It's very much the business management center of Alberta. It's where most of the white collar workers are. But the polls were showing going into this campaign, the NDP with like 40, 45, 50% support in Calgary. And I used to have a rule watching Alberta politics that if, going back to the 2019 election and even the 2015 election, where in those elections, the NDP, even in the election they won in 2015, they only got around 35, 36% of the vote in Calgary. So I had a rule up until this election that any poll that showed the NDP over 40% in Calgary was probably garbage. And there's no way the NDP would ever get more than 40% in Calgary. But this election, they got 49%. The NDP actually got more votes in Calgary than the UCP did. And it was tight. The NDP got 49%. The UCP got 48%. But it shows just how competitive the NDP was in Calgary. They won 14 seats that then compared to 12 seats for the UCP. All the ground game over the past year, really, in terms of nominating candidates, in terms of organizing and door knocking by the NDP was focused on Calgary, because they knew that, you know, their path to victory in this election was extremely narrow because there were only a certain amount of seats in play. And for the NDP to win that magic number, 44 seats to get a majority, there's 87 seats in the legislature. So 44 is the magic number. 10 out of 10 things needed to line up. And in this election for the NDP, 7 out of 10 lined up. So they did really well. Victory was within their sight, but it wasn't within their grasp. So they didn't win, but holy smokes, they made huge gains in Calgary in this election.
So if you're Rachel Notley and you're the NDP, are you feeling disappointed by this result? Are you feeling like you had a good showing? And is Rachel Notley, do you think, secure in her position as leader of the party?
Well, I mean, I think that there's probably a lot of NDP supporters who were pretty heartbroken on election night, because for the 2 years previous to Danielle Smith becoming premier, the NDP were leading in the polls, and they were continuing into this election, they were raising tons of money. And in Alberta, corporate and union donations are not allowed, so it's all individual donations. And you had the NDP, for years and going to this election, were raising millions of dollars, like tons of cash from individual donors. So they really created a real effective fundraising machine going into this campaign. So both campaigns were pretty equal, with the UCP and the NDP going into this campaign in terms of their war chest. I think that the one of the gambles the NDP made in this election, now this is the Alberta NDP, is a lot different than some other New Democratic parties across the country. This is not really a left-wing party. I call it a center-left-ish party with a heavy emphasis on the center. And going into this campaign, the NDP purposely recruited and nominated candidates, especially in Calgary, who came from more moderate centrist backgrounds. People who 10 years ago probably would have been comfortable running as progressive conservative candidates, people with economic development backgrounds, people with energy and oil and gas backgrounds, and some of the NDP candidates who got elected on Monday night. So it was very much, I joked around during the campaign if the NDP really wanted to win 60 seats in this election, they just have to change their name to the Progressive Conservatives and it would be a landslide. I think there's a hint of truth in that, as much as it was just kind of a funny joke, because they were really trying to be a centrist party. And they knew that trying to attract moderate voters in Calgary who, self-identify as conservatives, who probably wouldn't have been comfortable voting for a previous version of the NDP that was more of a social democratic party, that to get those voters, they needed to recruit those candidates and then needed to take moderate stances. And that's really who the Alberta NDP are now.
Now, in terms of the campaign the NDP ran, do you feel that it was a fairly strong campaign? And speaking of previous iterations of the Alberta mm-hmm. NDP, Brian Mason made a public statement during the campaign saying he felt that the communications game of Rachel Notley's team was subpar. What was your assessment of how they ran their campaign?
I think it was a fairly well put together campaign. I think at certain points they seemed to lack focus. in terms of what issues they wanted to focus on. You know, I think they came out strong early in the campaign with promises on healthcare, really talking about connecting, you know, every Albertan being able to be connected with a family doctor. They kind of took a page out of Stephen Harper's campaign textbook when they offered a, you know, $500 tax credit for kids at sports and recreation activities. And that was the kind of promise that was aimed kind of directly at the Calgary suburbs, kind of upper middle class affluent areas where, you know, where families put their kids in, you know, sports that cost, you know, tens of thousands or more a year, and some of the suburbs around Edmonton as well. But I mean, there was a lot of focus on Danielle Smith, and there was a lot of focus on some of the controversial comments that Danielle Smith has said. And we saw the NDP tracking their digital advertising and some of the ads they took out during the campaign. I mean, they really focused on Danielle Smith's musing about getting Albertans to pay to go see a family doctor. They focused on some of her comments about comparing Albertans to followers of Adolf Hitler, you know, because people got vaccinated in large numbers for COVID against COVID-19. And then one of the ones that I thought was quite effective and probably led to a lot of conservatives shifting their vote at the last minute or just staying home was Danielle Smith's comments that she refused to wear a poppy on Remembrance Day as a protest against COVID-19 public health measures, which is just very, I mean, offensive on a lot of levels, but also just a very weird thing to do, a very weird way to make a political statement about public health measures during a global pandemic. So, you know, I think that, you know, the NDP focused a lot on Danielle Smith. It felt a little bit like they were, you know, they had a campaign in mind to go, you know, to campaign against Jason Kenney, and they, you know, changed it a little bit to adjusted a little bit to focus on Danielle Smith and focus on her comments. Both parties, both the UCP and the NDP, ran some pretty negative ads in this election. And I think that, you know, that was aimed at driving their voters to the polls and trying to demoralize the other side. And I think that, you know, it didn't get them all the way, but I think it ended up being actually pretty effective, especially in Calgary. What I will say about the NDP campaign that I think really tripped them up was when they released the costing plan for their campaign platform, and it included an increase to the corporate tax in the province. Now, going back to the 2015 election, that was one of the big promises the NDP made in 2015, and it was to raise the corporate tax rate. I think from then, there it was from 10% to 12%, and now they've promised to raise it to from 8% to 11% if they had formed government. But Alberta politics was in a very different place in 2015. People were ready for change. Albertans had just endured years of scandal under the PC party, and the infamous "math is difficult" comment that Jim Prentice made during the 2015 leaders debate, you know, that was very out of character and very for Jim Prentice, but very, I mean, it felt like a sexist comment, him talking to a woman leader about that. And it really hurt the PCs. There was a press conference in that election where five CEOs of major companies in Edmonton held a press conference in a fancy penthouse boardroom and said, if the NDP forms government and raise taxes, we're going to stop donating money to children's hospitals. You could imagine how well that played with normal people. People were just basically fed up and said, you know, well, tax the heck out of them, you know. You know, we're done with these guys. These guys are entitled. None of that really happened in 2023, and I think where it hurt the NDP, I suspect, especially with Calgarians and some of the very competitive ridings, and there were a lot of close races in Calgary. If there's one thing that Calgarians are, I don't think most Calgarians, when you talk about conservatism, they're not social conservatives. The stuff that the Wild Rose Party talks about, the stuff that, you know, the more extreme elements of the UCP like to talk about, the stuff that Danielle Smith has talked about in the past, about sometimes some of these social conservative or more extreme stuff, I don't think most Calgarians are really interested in that. But what they are tax averse. And I think the NDP talking about increasing the corporate tax gave the UCP a cludgeon to really just hammer the NDP on. And almost immediately, as soon as that news came out from the NDP, you saw UCP ads, you saw UCP mailers talking about how the NDP was going to raise the tax, corporate tax rate by 38%. Now, this is the, you know, yes, technically it was 38%, but it was raising it from 8% to 11%. So, you know, so they really hammered hard on that. And a lot of Albertans don't have, you know, they may support the NDP on healthcare issues. They may support the NDP on education issues. They may like Rachel Notley more than they like Danielle Smith. But there's a lot of people who don't have incredibly fond memories of the NDP's time in government, specifically around the economy. And many of your listeners may remember that in 2015, right before the provincial election, it was actually late 2014, the international price of oil just totally collapsed. And that had a massive impact in Alberta in two big ways. First of all, it led to oil and gas operations shutting down because it wasn't profitable anymore. That means a lot of people, a lot of normal working class Albertans lost their jobs, and that was across the province. And that, you know, that, and it wasn't just normal working class. It was the managerial class. It was white collar workers who were in downtown Calgary who also lost their jobs. And we went into a recession, and it wasn't a great economic time for a lot of people. So there's not a lot of fond memories around. So you hear the UCP talking about, you know, the NDP's economic record all the time and bashing them for that. And I mean, it kind of plays into this, the kind of political stereotypes we have in Canada. And I mean, in every province, the Conservative Party will claim the NDP is bad on the economy. I mean, but in Alberta's case, you know, you live or die by the price of oil. And when things are great, governments can take the credit. And when things are bad, people will be blaming you and protesting at your door. Right. And the other part of the impact of the price of oil and why it's so important today in Alberta is because the provincial government relies on massive revenues from oil and gas royalties to fund the day-to-day operations of government. That's why Alberta is able to have the low taxes that we do, is because we're subsidized by the price of oil and gas, which really works when the price of oil and gas is high. And that's an international market that we don't really have any control over. But when the international price of oil drops, like, and we're looking at the price of oil now, I think yesterday it dropped down to $70 a barrel. I mean, it's not disaster, but it's not fantastic territory. It's not going to be great if it keeps dropping. But because of that, the government went from being in a, you know, a huge surplus position to being in a big deficit position. And all of a sudden, all the money was gone. And I mean, the money wasn't really gone, but the government, obviously, they lost a huge source of revenue. So that was the other thing that the NDP had to deal with. So, you know, the UCP was able to use that the corporate tax increase commitment in this election and really hammer the NDP. And I really feel like it was a real owned goal by the NDP, that they didn't need to include that in their election platform, and that it, I think it probably cost them votes.
Now, you mentioned some of the scandals facing Danielle Smith, and with a little bit of time we have left, I just want to finish on that topic, because, you know, there were the comments, and then there was the whole Artur Palauski case. Mm-hmm. Just a week or 2 weeks before the election, she was found by the Ethics Commission to have violated ethics rules going into an election. Do you think Danielle Smith will survive as leader of the UCP over the next 4 years? And if she does, do you think her and the team around her will take the party further to the right?
I think in terms of the ethics investigation, that's going to be really interesting, because that's going to come up again when the legislature sits, because the ethics commissioner noted that in her report that they wanted to bring it back. So whoever gets appointed as to become the new justice minister, they'll have to deal with that. And there could be further repercussions from that, though I imagine they'll do their best to try to bury it or push it off as far as they can. The United Conservative Party is a very divided political party. Now, back in, you know, for decades in Alberta, we were governed by the Progressive Conservative Party, and the PC Party was a huge tent. It was, you know, people who would otherwise be New Democrats or Liberals, and people who would be, you know, almost as right as Attila the Hun would be comfortable under the PC Party tent somewhere. And you had cabinet ministers who were, you know, former union presidents and cabinet ministers who were oil and gas guys and you know, or right-wing academic ideologues all sitting around the same cabinet table. The UCP is not that big of a tent. You know, a lot of people who would have voted PC 10 years ago are probably very comfortable in the NDP or voting for the NDP now. The UCP very much has its roots in the current version of the UCP very much has its roots and feels like more of an updated version of the old Wild Rose Party that Danielle Smith led in the 2012 election. And the divisions in this party, and I mean, many of your listeners might have heard about a group called Take Back Alberta. They're a political action committee. They think they call themselves an education society or something along those lines. But they came out of they originated out of opposition to COVID-19 public health restrictions and the border blockade at Coutts and the Freedom Convoy and occupation of Ottawa. And there are a number of conservative political activists have started organizing and holding town, like they're actually organizing and holding town hall meetings and mobilizing supporters, you know, whose politics are really shaped by opposition to vaccination, mandatory vaccinations, opposition to COVID health restrictions. And they played a big role in forcing the leadership review against Jason Kenney and defeating him in the leadership review. And they played a big role in supporting Danielle Smith and on her victory and selling UCP memberships and supporting her win in the UCP leadership race last year. And we saw last year that they took over half their candidates of a slate they had supported, swept the UCP executive elections and took over half the executive board. And coming up this October, the Take Back Alberta, I've heard, is committed to, you know, taking over the other side of the board with candidates that support. So we may have a, you know, a UCP that is governed effectively on the executive level and on the constituency level and through many nominations and MLAs who were newly elected MLAs who were elected this week, who kind of who are aligned with this more extreme version of conservatism that a lot of Albertans aren't comfortable with, aren't really familiar with. They don't recognize it as the type of conservatism that we're really used to in Alberta. Now, will Danielle Smith survive this? I don't see any reason why she won't. I mean, she plays to this crowd and she seems comfortable with them. And it doesn't seem like, from my vantage point and conservatives that I speak with, that there's any real effort by moderates. And I say moderate conservatives, and I'm talking about more the business conservative types. Doesn't seem to be any real effort by them to actually go out and organize and get people to show up to the AGM and retake some of these constituency associations. The Take Back Alberta groups and their kind of affiliated groups seem to have all the momentum within the UCP. So as long as they're supporting Danielle Smith, and I think that she's probably going to be fine. It's not an incredibly stable political party internally, but I don't see any indication now that Danielle Smith, her own personal leadership will be threatened. I mean, we'll see what happens when she names her cabinet. We'll see how the new dynamics work in the UCP caucus. Because the UCP lost so many seats in Calgary, this is a very rural-heavy caucus. It's a very rural-heavy government. And they lost 6 experienced cabinet ministers in this election, and there were another 2 or 3 who resigned before the election and chose not to run for re-election. So they're going to have to, they're going to have a bit of an experience gap in terms of people with cabinet experience going into this election, and she's going to have to figure out who fits where, and that will really set the tone of politics for the next 4 years.
Yeah. So the same party has returned to government, but the political landscape is definitely shifting. Thank you very much, David Crenoyer, for taking the time to speak with me today. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much, Nick. This has been great.
That was Rabble editor Nick Seabrook with Alberta political analyst Dave Crenoyer in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Nick and Dave. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. Here to bring us up to date on the news of the week on Rabble.ca, I'm going to pass it back over to Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week on Rabble.ca, in Labour news, Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga reports, the Public Service Alliance of Canada and the Nunavut Employees Union, also known as PSEC and EU, is calling out what they feel are racist attitudes within the Iqaluit Housing Authority that have become apparent during a more than 70-day strike. The Iqaluit Housing Authority has been hiring replacement workers to fill union jobs during the strike. Many of these workers are hired from southern Canada and are being paid more than PSAC NEU members who are mostly Inuit. PSAC NEU said that Iqaluit Housing Authority workers are calling for wage increases that keep pace with the high cost of living in Nunavut. PSAC NEU said that the Iqaluit Housing Authority has recently put forward an offer that provides 7.25% wage increase over 5 years, with a lump sum of 3.5% on ratification. The union said this offer is only a 0.9% increase in wages over previous offers. More than 200 delegates from PSAC North's convention rallied in support of the Iqaluit Housing Authority workers whose bargaining is being hurt by the use of this scab labor. The struggle in Iqaluit demonstrates the urgent need for anti-scab legislation. In other labor news, Rabble columnist Tom Sanborn analyzed the impact that the recent national strike by the Public Service Alliance of Canada, PSAC, will have on the labor movement. Not only did PSAC secure historic gains for their members on the right to remote work, But the strike also showed the strength of organized labor and the threats it still faces. The strike was one of the largest in Canadian history. After 2 years without a contract, PSAC not only was able to secure important protections for remote working, but also a pay increase that helps to offset the cost of inflation. Sanborn notes how this demonstrates how well organized and unified public sector unions are, but notes that the corporate class continues to attack the gains that PSAC has made, worrying that their strength will have a ripple effect on their private sector counterparts. Sanborn notes, quote, "Public sector workers in social services, education, and healthcare are more likely to be female and of color than not. And the attentive reader can hear the drumbeat of racism and misogyny in the background as their unions are attacked." End quote. Also this week, June 1st marks the beginning of Pride Month in Canada. National politics reporter Stephen Wenzel reports how acts of discrimination and hatred towards members of the 2S LGBTQIA+ community is on the rise. Egalité Canada, an organization dedicated to promoting equality for 2S LGBTQIA+ individuals, recently released a report detailing some of the nearly 6,500 attacks on 2S LGBTQIA+ communities in the first 3 months of 2023 alone. At the end of May, the Society of Queer Momentum, also known as Momentum Canada, published an open letter calling on the federal government to appoint a special representative on addressing and preventing anti-2S LGBTQIA+ hate. Finally, a panel at York University's Congress of the Humanities and Social Sciences this week talked about the important role that local food production can play in reducing hunger and food scarcity in Canada. Panelist Ebube Ogchi conducted a survey on food insecurity in Saskatchewan in 2022 and found that a reliance on foreign foods affected local knowledge about how food can be produced, preserved, prepared, and consumed. Ogchi explained how inflation was making access to food more difficult, saying, quote, "We're continuing to hear major concerns about how the prices of food have been rapidly increasing, about the difficulty accessing fresh food from local grocery stores, and concerns about the food supply chain," end quote. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nierenberg for supplying the music. Finally, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Research shows that walking through a forest for just 15 minutes can lower symptoms of anxiety and depression and boost positive moods. What better way to welcome spring than by spending time among the trees? As a national nonprofit organization, Tree Canada works to improve the lives of Canadians by planting and nurturing trees in communities across the country. They support individuals, local groups, businesses, and municipalities to increase tree cover and help fight climate change. Join Tree Canada in growing better places to live by visiting treecanada.ca.